Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We are writers, editors, reporters for ArizonaSports.com. We have a Suns blog called Empire of the Suns that is featured on that website. This is our podcast on that blog. Hey Kevin, the Suns are winning and it's kind of fun and we're all having fun. They beat the Warriors at Oracle. See ya, Oracle. It's gone.
It's an especially intriguing thing if you can win one game and suddenly that team that you beat is looking at a video clip that's like 3 seconds long of their head coach saying something. They haven't won on the road in the Western Conference this year.
Yep.
We're only a few games removed from beating the Bucks. The Suns beat the Bucks, swept them, and that I think was, by like winning percentages, the largest difference in two teams where the worst team swept any team in what? I don't remember how long. It was like ever or in the last three decades or something. So they've done some very odd things that, regardless of how good you think they are record-wise, super surprising. And they've done this with this starting lineup that's, we talked about it last podcast. This starting lineup accentuates everything good about Booker and Ayton. They're playing together and they have this swagger about them. Even in the loss to Portland, they bounced back, fought back at least, and obviously that hole was too deep, but same thing happened at the Warriors game. They obviously beat the Knicks like you would have expected, and here we are.
They've won 5 of 7. They are coming off a 115-111 win against the Warriors. We're recording this on Monday afternoon, waiting for Cardinals news to strike at any moment. But as for the Suns, that was a similar win to the game against the New York Knicks. And let me explain. They scored 16 points in the first quarter of both of those games. In both of those games, it felt like there was a missed opportunity for them to kind of control the game from the jump, and they did not do that. But what happened is their opponent let them hang around kind of long enough. And the great thing about the Warriors win, in my opinion, is that it wasn't really like a huge barrage in the third quarter. It was the second quarter. They didn't really wait until halftime and coming back maybe too late like they did in the Portland game, for example. They came back in the second quarter, scored 40 points in the second quarter. This reminds me of the win they had at Milwaukee earlier in the year. It was a similar type of game flow. And also, the Warriors shot 10 of 43 from three. They are very rarely going to do that. I think people who were watching it nationally on NBA TV got the Warriors broadcast, and they were saying how the Warriors announcers were crying that the Warriors were missing all these shots. And it's because those shots usually go in for that team because they're the best shooting team of all time. And it was nice to see the Suns be in that spot. I still maintain my original thesis from a week or two ago where this is going to be the same team we've seen all year. What I have in mind with that is they are still going to make these really egregious errors defensively. They're still going to have very high moments and very low moments. But with that being said, I think what has changed is that if you let them hang around enough long enough, they are going to compete, at least on some nights. Now, the change is doing it from some night to every night, but this is growth. It's growth. They would have gotten swept in both of these games in devastating fashion a couple months ago. Or even last month, really, when they were on that losing streak. But they showed a lot of fight. And once again, during this win of 5 of 7, I think what I'm going to remember the most from it is taking advantage of teams who are kind of in a strange spot. The Lakers, obviously, we don't need to explain that. The Warriors, we don't need to explain that. The Knicks are one of the worst teams in the league. And it's been nice to see them actually be able to take advantage of those games, because that's the first step towards building consistency for them as a team.
Yeah, because it's really been, like, when the Suns play badly, they lose. Like, that's why they lost that many straight. But this one was, okay, they didn't play, you know, you always say, oh, we didn't play 48 minutes, but they didn't play 48 minutes and they won, and they won against the best team in the land who also didn't play 48 minutes strongly. Of course, KD goes down. Maybe it's a different story. Of course, if the Warriors had hit even just a couple more threes in that first quarter, the second quarter, when they're stretching that lead out, because the Suns were letting them get these open shots, and it could have been a different story. Even going back to the Bucks game, it was Bucks missed a bunch of open shots. But you're seeing now where this team, even not at 100%, can take advantage of a good team not making these plays, and then making enough plays down the stretch to win. That's what you want to see, and that's where, like, we worry about this team's psyche heading into next year if they had continued to just flop late in games. And Devin Booker definitely didn't play the best down the stretch, even against the Warriors, but Mikal Bridges makes that steal. It's a different ball game. Yeah, it's internal growth, and I think both of us agreed that throughout the season there was progress at some individual level, Ayton, Booker, that kind of thing, even Josh Jackson, but we had yet to see, like, a team making progress at all, even just 2 weeks ago. And now we suddenly see that starting to come together. So that, I think, is the most striking thing about this.
It's good to have Devin Booker back, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember at the start of the season, there were a couple of games that were close, and I tweeted a couple of times to, like, not very positive feedback from people that, like, there's 6 minutes left, it's a three-point game. Devin Booker should win this game. And I held really high standards and still hold really high standards for the player that he is, and I thought that he was at the point this year in his fourth year where he could be that guy. He needs to go out and win this game now. He's that good of a player. And that guy kind of faded into the season with the injuries and the time off. And I think the injuries have been the biggest factor, because, in my opinion, one of his biggest, if not his biggest, improvement this year, we've talked about it a lot off mic, is that, like, he has a little bit more explosion, a little bit more speed. We even saw it on that dunk in the fourth quarter. Like, that's not really the type of bounce that we saw him have in the past, and his burst to the rim. But the injuries obviously have played a role there, but you can tell that having a run here of positive play, also not spending time out with the same guys. And that's the funny thing, is that TJ Warren might be coming. We still don't know on him. They say they're taking it day to day. People keep asking if he's even alive. Yes, I've seen him. I've seen him. He is alive. We just know that they're taking it day to day, and they're not ready to rule him out the rest of the season yet. But it's funny, because they're finally starting to get their groove back, and they're starting to get this consistency, because they've been playing with these same groups. That's why people are saying, like, Bridges should just go in the starting lineup. It's like, no, Bender should stay in the starting lineup, because these things are working right now. The numbers tell you otherwise. And of course, like, yes, of course they are, because Bender's not that good, but you don't change things when these things are happening right now, at least in my opinion. But that's why it's going to become so interesting to see TJ come back, because Devin in particular and the whole team seem like they're really figuring things out. He had 41 against the Knicks, and in that Warriors game, he was even better, in my opinion. He had, I believe, like 37. But that same type of stuff where he's hitting these shots in the fourth quarter that are just ridiculous. Klay Thompson is all over him. Yes, he had those bad possessions late. That's just what you can come to expect. You shrugged right there, and I agree with that shrug. And I think the most important thing is that over the last seven games, so the stretch where they won 5 of 7, Suns have an 8.7 net rating when he is on the court. When he's off the court, minus 10.7, so that's nearly a 20-point per 100 possession drop-off when he is on the court as opposed to off the court.
I shrugged because in that Bucks game, he was doing the right thing. He was making the passes. He was finding the right guys. Like, I'm going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt when he's cooking late in the game. Like, he kept their heads above water late. And then, like, last few minutes, like, yeah, he was pressing things and slowing down the offense, and they were trapping him, and he didn't make the best decisions just to get out of that situation. But I think what stands out to me is, when I went to a practice, like, after the Miami victory, when they got back to Phoenix a few weeks ago, or was that last week? Whatever.
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, it was last week. It feels like a long time ago. You know, they were talking about, okay, we're trying not to get tunnel vision. We're trying to get ball movement when we're not necessarily calling plays. And I think that's what Igor, probably in the clutch, I don't think Igor seems like a guy where he wants to call plays. Like, he likes calling his plays, but down the stretch, he's going to let Book do what Book does, and he's going to have him learn. So I think that was what that message was, as far as just, you guys need to run offense and not just get ISO-y late in games. That doesn't mean we need to call plays, though. But that's to come. The other part about the Golden State game, the one play that stuck out to me was the Ayton basically got an ISO post possession against Durant on his back. He kind of looked around, took a few dribbles, back shoulder fade away. And like Durant contested it really well, and he somehow, well, he's big. He's a big dude, so he got it up over and made it. And Durant just stares at him like kind of this disgusted, but just like disgusted, how did he do that type of look, which if that dude is staring at you that way, that's telling.
Yeah, I framed it as, I don't think Kevin Durant knew DeAndre Ayton had that kind of guard forward turnaround where he just looks like a guard and a forward with how fluid he is moving through the air and stuff and shooting in that sort of signature fadeaway kind of motion that you don't really see out of guards that often. He was really good in the Warriors game, and that the Warriors game, another thing from that is the Suns have three guys on certain nights can be great. DeAndre Ayton can be great on some nights. Devin Booker can be even better than that. And Kelly Oubre, the same thing. And all three of those guys were really good in that game. And when you had TJ Warren in there, he's another guy that can be great on certain nights. I think Mikal Bridges is just about there. Even Tyler Johnson, you can make the case that he can be there some nights. And the Suns have all of a sudden, this is what happens when you keep accumulating talent. Eventually, you hope at least that it's going to break through. And when you are one of the more talented teams in the league, in my opinion, you are going to have nights like this. And it's much more than that. I think they're growing from this, but I think the most interesting thing is what's coming up. I don't know if we want to hit on that just yet. Did you have anything else that really stood out to you from the last week or so? I think Tyler Johnson is another guy we should just hit on that, man, he's been really, really solid.
I think it's Tyler Johnson, a lot of it, where the tempo doesn't let games get away. Like, even the first quarter, that could have been 20 points instead of, what, was it 13 or 15 against the Warriors? He knows how to calm this team down. He knows how to kind of just bring them back together and be like, all right, we had a couple bad possessions, and things aren't snowballing. And I think that's the biggest difference in why they're allowed, or able, I guess, not allowed to push back and get back in the game. So yeah, he's been good. They still don't really have a backup point guard, but Book being backup is fine.
It's just a steady guard presence. I don't even think it's about the point guard stuff that Johnson's doing necessarily, but no. It's just having another steady guard presence there. It's having someone who, and this is how rough it got. It got to the point where they trust Johnson enough to let Booker go off the ball. Or maybe it's more so that Booker trusts him enough to have him go off the ball. There's some sort of combination there, I bet. But it's been great to see that. The Portland game kind of, they early Oubre and Booker struggled, and I could tell Booker was frustrated right off the bat, and he had a couple plays where he was taking out his frustration on the play. And then Portland just eviscerated them at the end of the first quarter, and then it was pretty much a done deal from there. Ray Spalding came in and they turned it around like crazy. I looked up those on-off court numbers. Ray Spalding's net rating is 113.3 because he was out there for that crazy run where they got it down to 5, I believe, with 4 seconds left or something. But those are the games that are funny because it depends on your perspective. You can shrug them off when you have a run like this. But if it's coming during a losing streak, you're like, it's just gotten worse.
Yeah.
And it just depends on how
that's true.
Ebbs and flows are going, and right now they're going well enough to where you can look at the Portland game and just say, ah, young team, whatever. They weren't ready to take advantage. Booker was off, and that's just the way those games go sometimes. But I teased the schedule coming up because I think it's a lot more interesting to me that the Suns have an easy schedule coming up the rest of the season, as opposed to it would have been way less interesting, in my opinion, if they have a difficult schedule, because you could just write it off. You can't really write it off now. So they play home against Utah on Wednesday, and then they have a Friday, Saturday back-to-back on the road, Houston and New Orleans. Then they are home against Chicago and Detroit, on the road against Sacramento and Utah, and then they are home against Washington, Memphis, Cleveland, Utah, New Orleans, before finishing at Houston and Dallas. Houston is the only team I really see there that is legitimately really good. Utah is right around there, and then every other team in there is not a playoff team right now. They end with Houston and Dallas.
That's
a stretch where they could go 500 if they play this well. Like, and that's not something we would have thought of.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. I mean, there are just a lot of, because the pieces are together now, that you want to build off that. Do you think they put Warren in the starting lineup when he's, like, when he's back and he has to go through some practices first because he's been out so long where he's just, shape is an issue right now. But do you think he's going to be like six-man scorey guy? And because I like what Igor actually did with Book last night, where the Warriors weren't hitting all their shots. He pulled Booker first and he's just like, let's just get this dude a little bit of rest where I can since this team isn't hitting. Brought him back, I think, late in the first quarter. And I don't know, did he do that in the third quarter? I don't really remember, but it was a little twist on, like, finding where I can rest Booker, and then, okay, he's ready to go down the stretch late. But that, to, I guess I went on that tangent to say that TJ would make that even easier to do if he's coming off the bench.
Interesting choice that they have. It's interesting because I think the obvious thing is that Warren starts, Bender stops playing, and Josh Jackson's minutes go down. But I don't know. They seem pretty committed to giving Josh at least 20-25 a night. And that's just not possible if TJ comes back and plays what he usually does, which is 35-40.
The thing is, too, I like Bender as a defensive, like, match with Ayton.
Yeah. It would be a lot better if he was shooting 35% from three instead of 15. But
yeah, it would. I looked when he was playing when Ayton and Holmes were out for a few games. His rim protection numbers are actually really good, and I know that's center spot, but dude still, like, bothers people. It's like Bridges. It's, people don't expect you to have that long of arms, and I don't know. I kind of like what they're doing with him, too. But that's because obviously they're winning. So,
yeah, is Ayton's one thing that I'm going to be watching for, so we can kind of wrap this up with what we're looking at in those last 10-15 games. I'm looking at how the Suns incorporate Ayton more offensively because he's clearly showing. I tweeted out the video last night that, like, he's got some legit post moves with jumpers now. It's not just him squaring up and taking a face-up jumper like he did 96% of the time at U of A. It's a lot of different stuff now. So with the addition of Johnson, does that make it easier to incorporate him more to the offense, books off the ball more, that puts attention elsewhere? How do they get him more involved? Because I think it's a lot easier to find him now that you know. Because they had the possession last night where he had Draymond on him, and he just instantly took that spinning fadeaway on the baseline. It didn't go in, but that was the first time I've seen him miss it this year, and that's been a go-to move for him. And he's actually the type of guy where you can throw it to him, and you're like, you want to get a solid look, and if you have the right matchup, you probably do get it from him in the post more times than not. So I wonder how they incorporate him into the offense based on the situation around them. Does TJ coming back make that more difficult? Because you got to get TJ his looks, too. So there's a lot of him, he deserves more attention than he's getting right now. I was very in the camp of he's limited. He's just going to have to find it through the rhythm of the game. That's just the way it is right now. But with what he's shown the past 6 weeks, and Ayton is claiming that this is what he's always been showing at U of A. He asked me in the locker room if I watched him at U of A, and I was like, yeah, dog, saw every second. Weren't doing this. You had a couple of them, but
like,
I can
literally
count,
two in one game.
I can count them on one hand. There was a spin move against UNLV, and there was another one against Oregon. That's about it. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah.
But, and shooting threes, is that something we see at the end of the year? I certainly don't think so. I think that's
next season.
Next year. When he was asked about that, funnily enough, he said, like, they're guarding me out there, which, like, they're not. Nope. It's there. There's been a couple where you trick yourself into thinking that he's going to take it just based on the rhythm. You don't really realize it's him right away, but you see someone stepping into the three-point line, catching the ball, and you're expecting them to shoot, and it's him, and then you're like, oh, right, yeah. He's not shooting.
Not allowed yet. Yeah, I think for me, I honestly want to see the other stuff. I want to see what this, I think since Miami game, what I would say is consistent, like, he hasn't really gotten beaten. Like, there's an occasional Kevon Looney's going to get an offensive board when he shouldn't because he didn't box out play. But for the most part, all of that energy stuff and all those questions he's answered very well. And I think for me, it's crunch time because his upsides, can you play him down the stretch? Like, he's proven that he can switch, he can guard smaller players. But the other stuff is, if you have the shot clock winding down and Book's double teamed and he somehow gets it to Ayton, can he take one dribble and make a play? Can he shoot the ball? Because how many bigs, true bigs like that, can have the ball in their hands at the end of the shot clock? That's one thing. I mentioned the switching. And then the other thing that I loved at Arizona and doesn't get enough attention, and you see it now, is that rebounding. Like, there are plays where he just comes out of nowhere and gets an offensive rebound in late game situations, again, extra possession. That's huge. So just that little stuff, I think, is where he's going to flash what is supposed to make him worthy of being taken number one.
We had the same discussion, I think, All-Star break, before the All-Star break, where it was last 20-25 games. I think the two things I said was Ayton continuing to improve and not stagnate, and then Booker, if he can stay healthy, is it something he can build off into next season? And both fingers crossed. I don't see any wood in the vicinity, but I would knock on it if I can. He has now stayed healthy long enough to the point where he looks like himself again. And this is not me being arrogant, like, I told you Devin Booker was amazing. He's scoring 45 a night or whatever. It's he's capable of these nights now consistently. And he just wasn't before because of the injuries and being in and out of the lineup so much. So can he stay healthy the rest of the season? It would certainly just be a big vote of confidence going forward that he just can avoid stubbing his toe or spraining his middle finger or whatever. Like,
all weird things, yeah.
It's always weird things like that, but those guys just get hurt sometimes, and I don't want him to be one of those guys, is what I'm saying. So it's just nice to see him in these games where, yeah, he can take over against the Warriors late.
Yeah.
He can do that.
We knew that, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought so. If you didn't think so, I don't know what to tell you, man.
You should read Kellen Olson's feature on Devin Booker. We haven't podcasted since that.
That was very good, by the way.
Thank you. At Kellen Olson on Twitter. It is my pinned tweet. I talked to a bunch of guys that know a lot more about scoring than I do. Jamal Crawford, Eddie House, Eddie Johnson, and just got them to basically say the things about him going forward and right now where he's at and everything. And just basically this whole thing, like, yes, we talk about how much he needs to win, but by the way, he's 22, and if he continues this pace, he's going to be the most prolific scoring guard ever.
Eddie's been on air kind of acting like he read your story, too. Because he's, well, I don't know if that's true, but
maybe I just talked about it with him and it kind of...
And he's like, yeah, that's a good point. Because he's done the same thing where we're like, yeah, this kid's only this old and he's doing all this despite, like, traps, double teams, all the attention, so...
I believe his line last night was, that man will steal your heart, when he hit that Klay Thompson, the elbow fadeaway over Klay Thompson. That was like his shot of the night, and Eddie like just laughed and was like, that man will steal your heart. It was a very good line. I love Eddie in the booth. All right, follow us at Empire of the Suns on Twitter, the podcast apps and all that kind of stuff. Give us a review if you want. Talk about how much Kevin sucks, because apparently all the reviews talk about how much I suck. Just add some balance into the world.
That's
right,
fair.
Kevin?
Yeah, that's fair. Do it.
I'm just messing around. Give me all the hate. I can handle it.
Oh, yeah. Shoot any negativity my way.
Not saying you can't handle it, though. I want it to be clear. We can both handle it. We're both strong, capable individuals.
Who don't read our Twitter mentions and cry at night.
I don't. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, we'll see you guys next week.